It's sort of like, the attack on Michael Cohen or Lev Parnas. These are people who used to work for Trump and they were embraced by MAGA. When they left the Trump universe and started telling the truth about what happened, then they were all being attacked as liars. But of course, their lies were in the service of the MAGA cause, and they stopped lying when they got out and started telling the truth. We're in a topsy-turvy world here.
Hello, friends, and welcome back to Highly Conflicted, where we unpack the news inside Trump world and what might be coming down next at Mar-a-Lago. For years, Donald Trump has made it known that he wants his political enemies to be prosecuted. And as he prepares for his imminent return to office, Trump has articulated an enemies list that includes everyone from the January 6th committee's vice chair Liz Cheney to special counsel Jack Smith. The rhetoric has generally been vague and often aspirational, but before Congress wrapped up for the end of the year, House Republicans issued what it called an interim report into the January 6th committee investigation that recommended how the Justice Department could go after Trump's detractors. In particular, the report went after Liz Cheney, suggesting she should be criminally investigated for supposedly violating multiple federal laws. And it went after Cassidy Hutchinson, the star witness for the January 6th committee, who provided some of the most incriminating public testimony against the president-elect. Now, all of this is ominous because Trump is returning to the White House with the intention of exercising a truly maximalist view of executive power. The top lawyer in the White House, David Warrington, has been his personal attack dog for several years in civil suits, while Trump's lawyers who defended him in the criminal cases will be running the day-to-day operations at the Justice Department. Some of those lawyers are hard supporters of the unitary executive theory, which argues that the president is the person with singular control over the executive branch, including the Department of Justice, throwing out the post-Watergate norm of DOJ independence in the wake of President Nixon's abuses. The kinds of resistance that we saw in Trump's first term, like the White House counsel Don McGahn cooperating against Trump with special counsel Robert Mueller, or AG Jeff Sessions recusing himself from the Russia investigation, those will almost certainly not exist, which means the biggest check on Trump potentially using the Justice Department to pursue his political enemies could be Congress, and especially Democrats on the House Judiciary Committee, and specifically Democrats on the House Judiciary Committee. So to talk about this, I'm joined by Congressman Jamie Raskin, who served on the January 6th committee and will be the top Democrat on the Judiciary Committee when the next Congress comes in next year. Mr. Raskin, thanks for coming on.
I'm psyched to be with you, Hugo. Thanks for having me.
So I want to start with the interim report from Republicans. And if we just take a look at the merits before we get into the kind of speech and debate clause protections for members of Congress and things of that nature. But the central claim from the report is that Liz Cheney may have violated numerous federal laws by secretly communicating with Cassidy Hutchinson without the knowledge of Cassidy's lawyer. But could you address the claim itself and what to make of the accusation about secret communications with Hutchinson? I mean, I covered the committee for a long time. You were on the committee, and it all seems a little out of context.
Well, let me start with this, Hugo. You could read that report and not have any idea that there was an organized attack on the United States Congress and the vice president to try to overthrow the 2020 presidential election. That, of course, was the heart of it. We had 140 police officers who were wounded by a vicious rampaging mob that had been incited by Donald Trump, as determined by the U.S. House of Representatives when it impeached him, and as 57 of 100 senators agreed at his impeachment trial. But that central narrative completely drops out. The president's incitement of the mob, an attempt to get Vice President Pence simply to nullify the 306 to 232 Electoral College victory of Joe Biden, who had won the election by more than 7 million votes, also vanishes. It's just disappeared in that so-called report. And that report also does not lay a glove on the 800 plus pages that were produced in the report, the official report of the January 6th Select Committee, which was a bipartisan committee that worked for more than a year, that interacted with more than 1,000 witnesses, canvassed millions of pages of documents and so on. And they simply have not contradicted any factual statement that was in the report, including the statements of Cassidy Hutchinson. So now there's apparently this effort to go after Liz Cheney, claiming that she interfered with his legal representation. Again, there are very few facts or details put in that report. So I don't quite know what they're referring to. But let me just state, as a matter of law, it is not against the law in the United States of America to encourage someone to testify truthfully in a legal proceeding. Witness tampering and suborning of perjury are all about trying to get people to lie, about trying to get people not to testify or not tell the truth. I am certain, without even looking at any of their allegations, that Liz Cheney would never encourage someone to perjure himself or herself, and would never encourage someone to lie, and would never discourage someone from testifying. So they haven't contradicted a single thing that Cassidy Hutchinson said or any of the factual statements that we made in the report. So it's very hard to see how you build a legal case around any of that.
But they do say in the report that they suggest that Cassidy Hutchinson committed some degree of perjury and that it was supposedly enabled by Liz Cheney getting involved, whether it was with Alyssa Farah Griffin or with bypassing Stefan Passantino, who was Cassidy Hutchinson's lawyer at the time. And there seems to be this central repeat allegation, which has actually lasted since the very day she testified, that her testimony had holes, it was not airtight. And I guess they've extrapolated that to mean she was potentially lying to the committee. But the committee spent a lot of time looking at that towards the tail end of its existence and obviously did not find that to be the conclusion.
But I didn't see any specific allegation that Cassidy Hutchinson perjured herself in her testimony before the committee. And I don't see what that would be based on. There were certain statements that she made that were based on hearsay, but she was very clearly quoting other people. And she said, therefore, I don't have direct knowledge of a certain thing, and this is based on what I was told by this person or that person. That's hardly against the law. And in any event, it's not traced to Liz Cheney because Cassidy Hutchinson testified on her own behalf truthfully. And maybe some people have a problem with that, but I can't see how they would have a problem with Liz Cheney as a member of Congress, as the vice chair of the January 6th Select Committee, doing what legislative investigators do, which is encouraging people to come forward and testify truthfully. I think that's the sum of their argument, that she somehow, it encouraged Cassidy Hutchinson to come forward and truthfully testify. That hardly is a crime in the United States. And in any event, she's completely protected by the speech and debate clause, which protects all of us in our legislative capacities, both in terms of our direct legislative action and in doing the investigative research that needs to be done in order to legislate and to act as legislators in a comprehensive way. And the Supreme Court has repeatedly upheld the research and investigative function of legislators.
So I want to talk a little bit about that, because speech and debate clause gets bandied around a lot. But this is something that is central to the functioning of Congress. And top level, it says that members of Congress cannot be questioned in any other venue other than, in this case, the House of Representatives, and then in the federal courts, the Article III judges have repeatedly said that Congress makes its own rules and it conducts its own investigations, and they have been loath to wade in on that. But I wonder if you think if that would be a sufficient hurdle for the Pam Bondi Department of Justice or the Cash Patel FBI to open a preliminary investigation or a criminal investigation just to start causing problems or headaches for kind of members of Congress who are on that committee.
Again, when Congress acts in committee and when it acts to exercise its investigative function as a part of a committee, it is within the very core responsibility of legislators to do that. And that's how Congress operates in committees, doing hearings and investigations and conducting, investigative and legislative research. And that's something that clearly has been argued, not just by Democrats, but by Republicans, by members of Congress through the ages. And it's something that the Supreme Court has extended a very robust umbrella around. If you can have the executive branch of government trying to intimidate legislators to keep them from doing their investigative responsibilities, you're shutting down a central aspect of the legislative function.
And just to be clear on the speech and debate clause, obviously extends to members of Congress, but the way you described it, it sounds like it also extends to people who testify before the committee, aides on the committee. Is that an accurate read of that?
The speech and debate clause doctrinally is extended to legislators and also to staff members of legislators. It does not apply to witnesses. Witnesses are not allowed to come before Congress and to lie. But again, there's no claim that Cassidy Hutchinson or any of the other January 6th committee witnesses lied in any way. And that's why a lot of the objections we're hearing are from people who wish that they would lie. It's sort of like, you know, the attack on Michael Cohen or Lev Parnas. These are people who used to work for Trump and they were embraced by MAGA. When they left the Trump universe and started telling the truth about what happened, then they were all being attacked as liars. But of course, their lies were in the service of the MAGA cause, and they stopped lying when they got out and started telling the truth. We're in a topsy-turvy world here.
The interim report, in many ways, seems to be a sort of potential roadmap. I mean, the first of kind of a suggestive course of action for the Trump 2.0 DOJ or the FBI to follow in terms of pursuing Trump's political enemies.
I'm sorry, complete that question. I'm afraid it's the last one I'm going to be able to take, Hugo.
Okay, let me change gears then and go to a Judiciary Committee. What are the oversight tools that House Democrats on the Judiciary Committee have going into this next Congress as you conduct oversight over the Trump DOJ? And what are the biggest concerns you have when it comes to how Trump might use the DOJ for his personal ends?
Well, the Department of Justice traditionally has enjoyed institutional independence from the office of the president. So the president has not ordered investigations into this person or that person. The president has not terminated investigations into this person or that person. That principle was, of course, tested during Donald Trump's first presidential administration. He seems to want to treat the Department of Justice as a mere adjunct under the unitary executive theory of his own presidency. So we are going to try to defend the principle of the independent integrity of the law enforcement function under the Department of Justice. And we will resist and oppose any efforts to politicize the department so that it goes after the president's enemies in the current parlance or goes easy on his friends. That is simply not how the rule of law works. And it directly undercuts more than two centuries of understanding of how the United States government works.
Even without subpoena power, just quickly?
For us? Well, obviously we're in a very slender majority here. I think it's 220 to 215. When three Republican members leave, it will be 217 to 215, which means that, they will need to have absolute attendance and absolute conformity of opinion in order to promote some kind of illegitimate agenda of collapsing the law enforcement function into a political function. But we are going to be standing very strong for the idea of the rule of law being something that is not subordinate to partisanship or the president of the United States, whose job under Article 2 of the Constitution is to take care that the laws are faithfully executed. So that's the opposite of the president being able to choose winners and losers in the justice process. The president's job is to take care that the laws are faithfully executed. And that, of course, is the defining mission of the Department of Justice.
Well, we'll be covering it all next year. Mr. Raskin, thank you for your insight and a preview into what you will be preparing.
You bet.
I'm Hugo Lowell, a senior political correspondent at The Guardian. Special thanks to our guest, Congressman Jenny Raskin. And special thanks to our listeners for supporting the podcast in its debut year. Happy holidays, and we will have much more for you in the weeks ahead.